K-Mud Podcast presents.
Welcome to Mindful Mud. I am Florina Nicli, your host, and I'm a Zen teacher, mindfulness instructor, as well as a bodywork and naturopath. So, yes, I do have a wonderful guest today, and the topic for the show will be the dynamics of change. It's a huge topic, and it will be wonderful. We will explore most effective ways of making change in our lives, health and performance, learning. And my very special guest is Russell Munsell. So Russell's professional path led to an early discovery of the mind and body connection. As a math professor at Humboldt University in the 60s, Russell began wondering how and why his students learned or not. This led to a four-decade professional career in training human capacities, which spans a breadth of disciplines. Munsell's primary focus is to teach individuals how to maximize their full potential, achieving beyond perceived limitations. He has created and taught programs in performance optimization, accelerated learning, and stress management. So some of the examples of his work, and that's just a little bit of what's behind. He trained professionals at SAGE, which is the Senior Actualization and Growth Explorations, who work to revitalize elderly people. He also trained competitive Latin dancers. He developed and coordinated stress management programs for HSU, now Cal Poly, at the Sacramento State University. Munsell continues to employ health promotion and lifestyle management strategies with medically referred clients recovering from illness and injuries. He's a certified integral Qigong and Tai Chi teacher. As a director of training for the Dynamic Health and Fitness Institute, Munsell developed and delivered individual and instructor training programs in dynamic walking and dynamic swimming. At age 43, Russell won the national 4-mile AAU championship in open water swimming. So really, I mean, we could go on and on, right? But I really want to hear from you, Russell. Thank you so much, first of all, for being here. I'm feeling very honored. And here we go. Welcome, Russell.
Thank you so much for inviting me to be here. And it's what I was going to say is clear from the introduction that I've been having a good time.
Yes, it sounds like it. Your life has been really full, huh?
Yeah, someplace I got the idea that what I was most interested in was the thing that I should be doing. And so I've pursued a lot of different things over the years. And they kept evolving into something else. In the late 60s, I was exposed, I had a lot of exposures that were very unusual for my upbringing. I grew up in a small cattle town in eastern Montana, 1340 on your dial, K-A-T-L, the cattle call, and in a Catholic school, and went through undergraduate school in Catholic schools. And so when I arrived in California and started experiencing yoga and encounter groups and psychedelics, I realized that there was a life below my head. And at that point, my work as a mathematician really began to shift. I'd been published and all, but I wasn't so interested in the math anymore. I was really interested in what was happening in the classroom and why my students were learning or not. And I talked to the counseling center and the psychology department and the education department, and nobody had answers. In the summer of 69, the Humboldt State came to me and said, we're gonna create a position and fund a position if you will take it. And I said, yes, and the mission was to enhance learning on the campus in whatever way. Didn't have any idea what I was doing. I began what I'd always done with everything else. I just jumped in and began looking at everything I could. And so we began to see great results. The students who participated in the program learned better. And one of the most important points I want to make out of this whole day is the idea of generalization. If you do the kind of basic work, I was trained as a logician, so we're interested in what's the structure of the language. If you do the basic work, then it's not just for the particular issue you have today, it's for your whole life. It generalizes your whole life. And students began to see changes in their health, changes in their relationships, changes in their, not only their studies, but their athletic performance or their creativity in the art studio. Everything was up at that point.
Wow, so understanding how we learn or how one individual learns can start to kind of influence the whole life, right?
No. It's not about how you learn. There has been a lot of, thank you for the question, because it is a clear misunderstanding about learning. There are all these different learning styles. There are the auditory or the visual or whatever else. I don't believe in that after all of my years of experience.
Oh, interesting.
Well, I'll get to that in just a minute. But let's say that what's most important is that the structure that is trying to learn, the structure that is trying to heal, and if that structure, like the camel, the last straw, if that structure, now you want to learn something, well, you're already so stressed out that the system is just going to defend itself and say, not a chance. You won't heal, you won't learn, you won't perform so well. So going back to really lifestyle management is what it's called these days, or there's life coaches and that sort of thing. I would actually like to hearken back to Greek times. My favorite goddess of all was Hygieia, hygiene.
Hygieia, all right. So this is a stretch, Russell. So how does hygiene have anything to do with how I learn better? Help me out here.
So if we take care of our lifestyle, if we practice good hygiene, and we'll talk about a method, a process for doing that. If we pay attention to our hygiene and we relieve the stresses that we're putting on, now the system has more capacity and is willing to welcome whatever new information you're wanting or new performance you're wanting, or it can now turn its way into strengthening itself. Oh, so this is an aside, which I'm sure there will be lots of. It's not commonly understood that your immune system has two operating states. It can either be in one or the other. One is it's defending you from whatever attack, whatever organism is messing with you. And the other is that if it doesn't have to defend you, it can build its strength.
Right.
So if we begin with the entire organism and its lifestyle, if we take off the stresses so it can build its strength, then it's willing to accept new information and new challenges.
You know, it's so interesting because I teach mindfulness at the schools, right? And it's exactly because of that, because the idea is the hardest thing for students is to get them ready to learn. Because when we're so stressed out about, you know, relationships and stuff that's not going well at home, and the whole stress level's up, just as you said, right? We can't put anything else into that system because it's full. And so now, and that's what mindfulness research is showing also in the schools, is that when we actually start learning some mindfulness techniques, we can be ready for learning. And that's why it's bringing it into the school so much. And this is what I'm trying to tell the kids too, and the teachers, obviously. So that sounds very familiar to me, yes. So how do we get our system ready for the new input?
Well, let's do that right now.
Mm-hmm.
Before we talk more about the program, let's do it in this moment.
Okay.
You talk about mindfulness. I'd like to kind of reframe that. My way of focusing that is about being present.
Mm-hmm.
So if all of us in this moment be more present by First of all, focusing on your internal proprioceptive, weight underside. Notice the bottom of your feet, weight distribution on your feet, toes, heels, sides. Notice your butt on the chair or if wherever you're sitting. Just notice the feelings. No right or wrong, nothing to change, no good or bad, just whatever's there. Just be present for your experience. And maybe you feel your back against the chair. And let your whole pelvis relax. Just release your perineum, your anus and genitals. Release your buttocks. Release your belly. If you have to, open the front of your pants. Just let your belly hang out. That's actually natural. Holding our belly in is not natural. So just whatever you need to do, get your belly relaxed. And then allow your entire thorax, your rib cage, to relax. Just to hang down. It's hinged at the back from the spine. And if you release it, like looking at a skeleton in a classroom, if you release the front, the ribs kind of hang down in front. And the sternum will also come down. So just relax your ribs and sternum. And maybe in the back, you notice your shoulder blades start to separate a little bit. So not trying to hold your chest up now or anything. And now drop your tailbone to the center of the earth. Don't tuck it under, nothing like that. Just let it go. Let it drop toward the center of the earth. And in each one, we use the image of holding a ball between the chin and the top of the sternum. So just hold a little ball there. You might lower your chin by maybe an eighth or a quarter of an inch, but that lengthens the root of your brain, your brain stem. And so now your whole spine is lengthened from your tailbone to the top of your hip. And notice your entire body breathing. Your entire body is involved and participates in each breath, very subtly in some places. Weight underside, whole body breathing. No right way to breathe, don't change anything. Just notice that it's happening. So with all that proprioceptive awareness, so that's the inside of me, the inside of my skin. Now the outside of my skin, full field of vision. Without looking at anything, see everything. Just relax your eyes, soft eyes, seeing without looking. Similarly, hearing without listening. There's no need to name or label anything in your field of vision or in your aural field. Just allow it to be there. Your nervous system is, and your survival is based on accurate information. So allow all this information there. Seeing without looking, hearing without listening, the entire surface of your skin, whole body. And welcoming whatever you're experiencing. Any journey starts from where you are. So if we give our nervous system really good information, welcome what's coming. Don't resist it. Don't fight it off. Don't try to change it. No need to do any of those things. Just allow it to flow. And as soon as it starts to flow, what you notice is that things are changing. So welcoming with an inner smile. Well, I've got a really good friend showing up at the front door. How your whole body gives it a smile. May not break out on a big smile on your face, not necessary, but you really feel that welcoming smile, to your experience in this moment. So this is how I begin every session, every teaching, every class, every client, as we always start from being present right now. And now let's, where do you want to go next?
So that's what you call presencing, right?
Yeah,
and so how is that related to when you said we start noticing the change, right? I mean, I totally noticed the change because coming in, having to deal with all the stuff that's not working, right? Trying to figuring it out. The nervous system gets tight, gets stressed, right? And then just making this short practice of just noticing and less resisting or not resisting the experience, right? Everything relaxes and life becomes way more joyful and easy, right? So how is this related now to creating change in our own lives?
Well, I would say that the most important way to look at your lifestyle hygiene is via your personal integrity. But let's get there.
Mm-hmm.
So let's all of us just do a little experiment for a couple of minutes. And the one that's kind of up for everybody is usually diet. So I'd like you to think for a moment, and if you have paper and pencil and want to make some notes, please don't take long notes, just put down key words and phrases. So, you know, what do you eat? What do you eat for breakfast? What do you eat for lunch? What do you eat for dinner? What are the normal foods that you eat? And how much do you eat? And how fast do you eat? And who are you eating with? And what's your emotional state? And are you reading or watching TV or something? Tell me about your eating lifestyle. What you eat, how it is, you know, how it all goes. What do you think about your food? And how do you feel after you've eaten and over the next day? I mean, we could go into how that affects your sleep and rest and all that, but let's leave that aside for now. So that was the first question. The second question is, I want you to check in with your heart. Now, I'm not asking you to check in with your mom or you ever read or any class you ever took or any doctor you ever talked to. I want you to check in with your heart. What do you kind of know? Now you have to kind of listen carefully and quietly. What do you kind of know deep in your heart would be the best eating lifestyle for you? What would you be eating? And what time of day would you be eating? And where would you be? And how much and how fast? And who else is there? And what else are you doing? And how would you really like to be feeling after eating that? And how would you like to feel in your body after eating that? And what would be your kind of ideal eating lifestyle? The answers to those two questions and the separation between them is the stress in your life. This is my attitude. Other people have described it differently, but this is my belief out of experience, is that difference is what's important. It's not how different you are from eating the right diet according to some you know, textbook or teacher or your mother or whatever. It's the difference between what you know deep in your own heart. And I don't really have any argument with that at all, with whatever it is you know in your heart. All I'm going to ask you to do, so that's the assessment. Well, so what are some opportunities? So that this is now we're talking about what's the process of making these changes. So that's the assessment stage about diet. The second stage about diet then, well, what are the alternatives? What kind of education do you want? What would you like to know? I may have some information from you for you, or I may be able to direct you to a source of some information if you have particular questions about particular things. But I don't have any answers for you. So given that you've made an assessment and you are interested in maybe getting some information, so get the information that you need. And now, well, what might you try to see how that works? Well, there's not a right or wrong or good or bad or something you have to change. In fact, I'd like you to throw out the word change. Change is stressful. I don't want you to change. And if you say change, your nervous system and your little ego in there is going, not me. I made the best choice already.
I love that, yes.
So instead of changing, often my ego is pretty interested in experiments. So let's try an experiment. Let's explore. So the experiment might be, I was just telling this story earlier today. This is back in the 60s when I first started. I decided it was a really good idea to get off sugar. So my first experiment was I started eating honey. That wasn't quite right. I tried brown sugar for a while. I mean, and these experiments go on, and we'll talk about that in a minute. The experiments go on for a little while. And then it was brown sugar. Then it was molasses. And then it was back to once in a while, probably once a month in my life to this day, there will be a Sunday breakfast and there's going to be some real maple syrup, or there'll be some kind of a piece of bread that I want to put some honey on. But it happens like once a month. So sugar is not an issue in my life at this point. So let's talk about that experimenting. What does it mean? What would you like to try out? And for how long? Once I was going to try getting off of chocolate, I eat 100% chocolate. And at that point, I was probably eating 70% chocolate. And I was trying to get off chocolate. And I'm going to do it for a week. On the second day, my whole nervous system was going, no, it doesn't work. I'm not willing to do this. So before you do it, before I eat the chocolate, I immediately renegotiate my contract with myself, the contract I made to do an experiment. Oh, I was doing this experiment to go for a week without chocolate. I made it for 2 days, and I'm going to have some chocolate now, and then I'm going to try another 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see what happens if I start going without chocolate a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, I moved the adjustment that came, the learning that came. I went from 70% chocolate, eating a lot, because the more sugar I put in, the more I wanted. It was the sugar bugs that were, well, it wasn't the chocolate that I was wanting, it was the sugar bugs talking. And I went to all the way up to 100% chocolate. It took a little while. And now I eat about a half a bar a day. It's 100% chocolate. There's no milk in it. There's no sugar in it. And I'm pretty much at peace with that.
Russell, go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say, you might not make that same choice about chocolate, but the point is that you begin to experiment and play until you find the place that you feel like what you're doing and your personal integrity have come together.
Yeah, I think that is really so important, because often we're trying a change that somebody else has an idea about, right? You should do this. And as you said, our ego is like, yeah, right. Or underneath, we are not really aligned with that. This is such. I know so many folks who like to change, and then they get started, and then they fall, right? And it's such a struggle. What I see, this is why I love when you said, "Yeah, let's not call it change. Let's call it an experiment." And you know, perhaps when we talk about diet, I have a example of my own life to share. In my late teens, I was very, in early 20s, I was severely anorexic and was really between dying and living, and I didn't want to keep going on this planet. That's kind of how it was. And, you know, knowing I should eat again did not help. But then I started to meditate, and I started to find out, who am I really? What's really going on here on this planet with myself? What is this all about? And this whole thing about anorexia totally fell off. I didn't change it. I didn't like, it took a few years, don't get me wrong, right? But literally it did eventually completely fall off. That whole idea of counting calories and looking what you eat, all the stuff that I've been in for so deep. And really it was about just, as you said, right, finding that integrity, finding what is working for me. But in a bigger life question. Yeah.
Exactly. So integrity, that you use your own personal integrity, you're only dealing with yourself in a way, that you have a process to do this, using your integrity and to take a look. You have a change process that goes through assessing where you are and looking at alternatives, educating yourself if you need to, and then beginning to do experiments and see where they go. And the experiment can be for one meal, where I'm staying with diet for now, but for one meal or for one day or one week or whatever you want. But the most important thing for me about that, about the process and the experiments, is that please, if you're going to break your experiment, that's fine. That is not an issue for me. I'm more concerned that if you do it in a way that creates guilt. Instead, I'd like you to acknowledge the experiment, that you are going to change, and you're not going to break it. You're going to change it. Well, I was doing an experiment, but I've gotten some information now, and it tells me that this would be a better way to do this. But going for a week was too much, so go for 2 days or whatever.
Right. I'm thinking about your chocolate again, Russell, because I remember when, perhaps we should let the audience know how we know each other. We got to know each other a little bit through Qigong and Tai Chi, because we have the same master, Dr. Young. And we met how many years ago up on the mountain? A few years, probably. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that.
8 or 10?
I would say so, yeah. Yeah, something like that. And I do remember you brought some 100% chocolate up there.
Absolutely. I won't brought any other kind.
So I tried some of it, and I think I need to start with the 70% and work myself up there. It's quite an experiment, because you just said it's chocolate. That's all you said. I remember that. And I had a bite, and I'm like, whoa, that is different. So every time I see some real dark chocolate, I think about you. So again, it's about working yourself up to something different, right? And see if that's working for you.
Well, exactly. And that you have a process that makes, that starts from the assumption that the issues we have are developmental.
Oh, can you elaborate?
A lot of therapy and medicine is based on the assumption that something is wrong.
I see.
Something is bad. Something is, there's a big judgment put on it. It looks like you've got something to learn. It's developmental. This is part of your, in this life, this is part of your growth process. This is part of your development. Rather than there's something wrong and we've got to fix it. No.
Yes.
Much more effortless on both sides, so to speak. So rather than the poor attitude that we have being rejected, go, this is kind of interesting. I wonder if I could approach these situations in a different way.
So important, right? Changing the whole idea of like, I need to self-improve. I'm a self-improvement project, instead of like, whoa, this is a journey. Let's go explore. When I started to like see my life and the world around me more like it. Yes, as you said, it becomes ease, right? There is an ease to it. There's a playfulness, a joy. Because I think a lot of it is the guilt is gone, right? And that resistance is gone too. I mean, we spend so much effort and time and energy on resisting what's already here.
Yeah. And, this idea of experiment, I use that word here to start up the conversation because that's kind of the clearest description. But I think explore, play, are actually better words, but they're too often misunderstood. But experiment kind of gives you, there can be some structure to it and that. But it's about exploring, finding out, you know, what's true about yourself and how, because when you start to do, maybe you think this is the ideal over here, and there's some tension with what you're doing, so you go, well, I'm going to change right to that. Well, that might be just not really who you are. That's just the ideal you've been holding. So when you start to bring the two together is when the wonderful things start to happen. Now, the other part of it, besides renegotiating, if you would like to make any change in the experiment, being encouraged, there are a couple of other pieces to this. What are the principles of learning generally?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about the learning the alphabet or learning to play tennis, repetition. Whatever it is you want to do or change, if you want to learn to play tennis, if you want to take on a new experiment, plan it for something, make the experiments involve repetition. You have to do it several times. You didn't learn the alphabet with one repetition. You don't learn tennis with one lesson. At least I'm told that. I've never played tennis. But and the second principle is, I'm sorry, that's the repetition is the second principle. The first one is commitment.
So would that be like that dialogue you have with your heart?
I see that I have this behavior pattern and this ideal, I am committed to changing that, mm-hmm. to reducing that stress. What were you saying?
So would that be kind of that conversation to have first with the heart, like really that listening of what does the heart really like? Because if we have an idea of commitment, that I think that's in a way almost, at least for me, almost easier. I can tell myself I have a commitment to do something, but then the question is, am I going to keep it? Am I really going to do those repetitive learning exercises or whatever it is that I need to do to get somewhere, right?
Well, part of what this is bringing to, this is really about respecting your heart.
Mm-hmm.
So two things. First of all, that my mind, this may be an extreme position, but my mind makes up stories about reality.
Oh, yeah.
My heart experiences reality.
Mm.
So, way often, I just saw a movie, streamed a movie from a film festival about Tundun, which is the Tibetan practice for experienced practitioners, Tibetan Buddhist practice, of when they are getting close to death, going into meditation. And when they die, they don't begin to deteriorate for days or weeks even. Their skin will stay pliable. There's no sign of life anyplace, except there's a warmth in the area of the heart. The rest of the body doesn't necessarily get cold, but the area of the heart remains warm, which to me is just wonderful acknowledgement of our heart really is the center. What's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
Acknowledging the wisdom of our heart.
Wow, that is powerful, right? Whew. Mm-hmm. So starting to realign with what the heart is actually asking from us.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Wow, wouldn't that change the whole world?
Yeah.
Talking about individual practice, right? But in a way, it's like, it's what I say a lot to my students. It's like meditation is almost like activism, or it is activism in a way. And I think personal change to really realign to our purpose is, in a way, helping out the planet as well.
Well, and personal change, a lot of us think of personal change, or we've been taught to think of personal change, as there being ideas about what's right or wrong.
Right.
We should be changing to how we should be behaving, what we should be doing, on and on.
So ingrained.
And to me, that just creates a lot of I don't want to use psychological terms, but just a lot of psychological stress. So if we come back to the heart and we really start by asking the heart about the changes that we're interested in making, and use that information rather than all this education.
All right. Yes. And it's funny because you, as a math professor, right? Isn't that interesting? A lot of people think math is such a heady subject.
Well, it was. And until I was 26 years old, my sex organs were certainly active, but I wasn't aware kind of anything below my head.
Mm-hmm.
Very successful mathematician, logician, doing research and getting important results.
Mm-hmm.
When in 67, when I started to experience psychedelics and encounter groups and yoga and discovered the rest of my body. Oh, let me give you a quick result of that.
Mm-hmm.
So a few months into that, and I had a horrific motorcycle accident where I flipped the motorcycle and landed on my sacrum and busted it all up and busted an arm and everything. What I did was, and they wanted to give me lots of drugs, which I wouldn't take. And I laid in bed and did my yoga practice in my imagination. And in 3 weeks, they were taking off the cast on the arm. And, well, maybe it wasn't really broken. And the hematoma, the size of half a basketball on my sacrum, was totally reduced.
That's amazing.
And I've had a lot of body work since to deal with some of that. But they thought, you know, well, maybe you weren't really injured. So there was some new connectivity with my body that, and I'll actually take it back further, because in high school, I broke my neck and my back playing football, and I was always in pain. And I lived in pain from the middle 50s until the late 80s, until I began to find ways of dealing with it by actually making changes in my posture and movement in ways that nobody had ever guessed about. But in this case, the Dalai Lama had commissioned a bunch of Western scientists from the brain lab at, I can't remember the exact name, and the guy at the University of Wisconsin.
Oh, okay, Richard Davidson.
Right, Richard, and several other people from around the world who are under the sponsorship of the Dalai Lama were undertaking a scientific examination of what was happening, and they filmed the whole bit and made it into a movie. And so it's a short documentary movie. If you were to look on, you could find more details about it and who distributes it and all that. If you were to look on the program for MVFF.com, Mill Valley Film Festival.com.
Fascinating. Thank you.
I don't have any other expertise in this.
Yeah. Thank you, Russell. It is so interesting when we start to see these kind of miracle things happening, right? And then we're like, well, is this really true? And because there is a lot of stuff that's not true out there as well, right?
We were talking about the principles of learning, commitment, repetition, and I wanted to complete that with the third, which is expression. So as you go through, so you've made a commitment to what you want to change, you've made some experiments, and you've been repeating the experiment. And now it's important to give some expression to the results of the experiment. Now, that expression could be saying it to someone else. It could be writing it out, journaling it. It could be dancing it out, or making a painting or a drawing. Any means of expression are wonderful in this case, because what that does is it anchors the change. You've acknowledged the change in a way that, given it an external reality, which serves to anchor it. So commitment, repetition, and expression as the three principles of learning.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, this is the stuff, right? Right there. So, you know, I think it's very fascinating talking about pain. You brought up pain and sudden healing, and it's kind of that same thing with the Tibetan, right? These things that we don't really understand how things happen, but things happen when we start to get in alignment with ourselves. Is that your experience as well?
When we begin to come into integrity,
mm-hmm.
we may experience things that we haven't experienced before. We may allow ourselves to, I have some upset in my back or whatever it is. And so now I begin to experiment with that more. It opens for the material to come up to be dealt with. Remember, it's developmental.
Right.
And kind of Western thought likes to categorize and pigeonhole things and put them on. I think everything's all related to everything, everywhere, all the time, like the movie title. You know, it's all of this stuff is all related to each other. And I would have doubted that until the first time I had a deep tissue, like a rolfing session,
mm-hmm.
having memories from my childhood.
Yes. Changes always happen, right? Question is, how are we going to take, in a way, control of it? Where do we want to go? How do we optimize our own life? That's kind of like the stuff that you found out, right? Through finding out the patterns underneath everything.
Well, that and what I feel drawn to say a little bit about is a system called psychosynthesis.
Mm-hmm.
A contemporary of Freud and Jung, Roberto Osicioli, an Italian, was saying, no, your models to Freud and Jung are too small, and they're all based on there being something wrong, there being a problem. And instead, if we have a more developmental model, so his model was, there was like a six-pointed star, and it had, you know, mind and body and emotions and imagination and intuition and impulse and desire. If we look at our lives in any moment, we have a physical experience, a mental experience, an emotional experience, probably some impulse or desire, something we want to have or something we want to do, and imagine. So all these things are going on. His contention is that if there's some issue someplace in one of those places, like maybe there's something going on with the emotions, or maybe instead you go over and work on the body, because there's too much resistance in the emotions. So you work on the body and that may release the emotions, or vice versa. Or maybe through doing imagery. So this is back to the expression part of the principles of learning, giving expression. As soon as you transform it, give it expression in that kind of a way, you're using the imagery to take care of the other issues that might exist in some other part of your being.
Yeah, I mean, I experienced that a lot just in my practice as a body worker, right? How much we have so many different outlets of, I don't know if resolving is the right thing to say, but moving out of certain patterns that are unhelpful, right? There's so many different ways to move ahead and create different habits and create different patterns that are more and more helpful to ourselves and make ourselves more and more whole. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
That is, and it brings me right back to where we started. Hygieia.
Okay, tell me more.
Well, it's the Greek goddess of hygiene. And I'll say a little bit more about her father, Asclepius. And Asclepius was a doctor, and he was so successful that the gods had to recognize him and made him kind of a demigod at one point. But then they realized he was so successful, he was interfering in their business. So they killed him off. But in the meantime, his daughter took a softer way rather than healing. Why do we ever get to the point of healing in the first place? Let's start with hygiene. Let's take care of our system in a way that we are healthy and whole and do not have the issues that require healing. So if we start from the very basis, I'm going to open up six things want to come out at once. So we've been talking about diet. My experience is that there are four primary areas of the lifestyle that seem to really be the infrastructure. So diet, exercise, rest, and relationships. And so we could spend another whole session on each of those kind of thing. But primarily those four, because you've referred to some of the others like purpose in life or spiritual satisfaction or work satisfaction, or there are a lot of other things. But if this infrastructure isn't there, you can do all you want over here, and things are not going to change that much.
Right. So they're the basis for learning, or?
Well, these are the basic, these are the infrastructure, the pillars, the four pillars, if you like, of the house of health and of stress-free health. Diet, exercise, rest, meaning both sleep and meditation, and relationship. And as I said before, we could spend a lot of time on each of those. But the issue is that you look at your life, you look at these pretty infrastructural, the structure underneath that holds up this whole thing, and you pay attention to that in a way of taking care of your hygiene, keeping yourself in good shape, keeping, you know, not attacking your body with your daily habits. Attacking your vitality. Mm-hmm. Our business is called dynamic vitality. So it's really about maintaining and enhancing your vitality.
So, and then again, because if we can listen about, you know, it's again like, okay, rest, more rest. People might be resistant, right, to sleeping more, meditation, or any of these other restful things, or exercise, God forbid, right? For some folks, it's like, that's stressful. So again, I think there, again, I would say it's probably like, listen first to your heart. Where's that stress between, right, that difference between what you should be doing and what your heart really wants? Is that correct? So you can use that in all these four different areas.
Slightly different. You said... Okay. Should be doing and what your heart wants. I don't even go there. It's what you are doing and what your heart wants.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you start where you're at.
Start where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're holding an image of, your heart's holding an image of what might be ideal. But your heart has also been trained into its current status. So you give it time for these two to come together. Not that your behavior goes directly to what your heart was asking, but rather that you begin experimenting to find, well, what's the real truth for me?
Because again, right, that could probably change over the years as well.
Absolutely, it continues to change.
Right, so it keeps it interesting, right? So I just want to let listeners know you're listening to Mindful Mud on KMUD, and my wonderful guest is Russell Munsell. And this is a calling show. We're talking about change and kind of how do we create an optimum us? Or I don't know how you would say that, but like how do we realign our own selves with our desires, with our where we want to be and how we want to live?
So I want to go back to a comment you made just a moment ago about someone who maybe has an attitude about their rest, meditation, sleep, or whatever their rest lifestyle is,
mm-hmm.
of going, well, I can't really do anything about that, or maybe their mind is saying, I don't need to make any kind of changes. So that's what's happening is that I'm kind of, I mean, they can't see me, but I'm pointing to my head. And it's like, well, that's what's going on up there. I need to ask my heart exactly what you said. That is the key. And in asking the heart, the second part of the change process of the model, change model, of looking at alternatives and being educated. Well, go take a little look at what's true about sleep and rest, and go online and see what the latest writings are and that sort of thing. I'm sitting at my old bookshelf, so that all the new books are not in this room. Linda Geddes, G-E-D-D-E-S, something like Chasing the Sun. And the book is about chronobiology, how our whole bodies and all of our systems are tied to the sun. Our first relationship in life is to the sun.
Wow.
That's the most important relationship we have. Of all relationships we have, is to the sun. And these organisms that we live in developed over millions of years in a natural sun-driven environment. And we know from studying evolution that they change really slow. So why is it we think that our bodies are going to let us get away with totally ignoring our chronobiology?
I've always wondered that, like, why does everybody work the same hours in the winter than in the summer, right?
Exactly. So, and I'm not saying there's a certain way that any of you should live your life. I'm just saying, you know, do a little reading, explore a little bit, and maybe you'll decide to try some experiments. Well, what would happen if... And what would happen if, and try a few and just see what is different. What mm-hmm. if I did go to bed a little earlier? Or what if I did eat dinner before 6 so that when I get in bed, I can actually go to sleep and get deep restorative sleep, etc.
It's interesting. I think our bodies are really the ones, when we get that biofeedback, right? When we start to make an experiment, like, what if, right? What happens? Like, this is kind of the way because I love to go to bed late, and I know sometimes I overdo it. And then I'm like, what happens if I really go early? Would I really miss my activities in the evening, right? And then when I do that and I wake up so refreshed, then I'm like, oh, yeah, that feels so good. I'm going to do that again. So, again, it's like that biofeedback that we get is really the best motivator, isn't it?
Yes. And that's where we began.
Mm-hmm.
Every moment in our lives that we are present is an opportunity for change and for evolution and for development. If we're not here, it's not going to happen. So, and you're talking about the biofeedback. If I'm here, if I'm paying attention, my body, if I injure myself, or the lady I mentioned who broke her leg, she continued even in the emergency room with a parachutist break where the whole tibia is opened in a spiral. So it's a huge spiral break all the way up.
Do you want to tell that story to the audience?
Oh, sure. So a woman who had been in my classes training jumped off a porch following a friend at a party and got a parachutist break of her tibia. And that's a break because it's a compression break from the top, from the knee down toward the ankle. And as a result, the bone opens like a spiral, like if you hit a paper towel tube on the end enough where it began to come apart in a spiral all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
Extremely painful, considered a very serious break, a lot of tissue exposed, possibility of infections, all that, et cetera. So she had me called. I got to the emergency room. She was already refusing drugs and just said, no, I'm going to pay attention to it. It's just a very strong sensation. I could put a label on it called pain, but it's just a really strong sensation, and I'm paying it. I'm staying present for that. And so she told the doctor, you know, that no drugs. They cast it, said it would be at least 10 weeks in the cast, but they wanted to see her in about four weeks, to x-ray and be sure it was healing properly. She went in on the, and in the meantime, not only did she continue to pay attention to it, and well, let's do this right now. I'll do one of the little pieces out of the general healing from any kind of an injury. So whatever little injury you've got, a sprained finger, you know, you banged your knee, whatever it is, whatever's happening in your body at this moment, just put your attention fully there. Welcome whatever the feelings are. And if you get attitudes coming up, oh, I wish it didn't feel this way, just let them go too. Or I've got to fix this, or I should have done this about it. Not, just let all that stuff go. Just feel what's happening there. And almost that sense again of a little inner smile. You're welcoming it. You're welcoming. This is the biofeedback your healing system needs. So welcoming it. Now imagine that you have nostrils there. And breathe through that place, that injury, that little ding, that little sprain, that whatever it is, scrape. Put nostrils there. Breathe through it. Inhale through it. Exhale through it. Now imagine that the fluids, so gases and liquids, are all fluids. So imagine that the fluid that you are breathing is passing back and forth as you breathe. And bring to your memory, you know, in the spring when the buds on the bushes and the trees first open, you know, that color green, make the fluid that color green. So you're breathing this light electric green fluid back and forth through your injury. Now, if you do that regularly, and I'm not talking about a schedule, I'm talking about a relationship with your body and with the injury. Every time the body's speaks up and squawks and goes, hey, I hurt a little bit. The first thing you do is take your attention there, then put some nostrils there, and then breathe through it, and then breathe the light green. So she did that.
That's what she did in a hospital with her broken leg?
She was released. They put a big cast on. It was from above her knee, including her whole foot. So now, especially in 10 weeks, but no matter how long, you would expect there to be some muscle atrophy. What she also did every day, at least twice, was did her entire sports athletic workout in her imagination. Because when you imagine a movement, although the muscle itself may not move, the neurons that fire it were fired, and the muscle was actually fired. There might not have been any movement. So after 26 days, she went in, they took the x-ray, they said, we don't understand what's happening here, but you have a stronger leg than you had before you broke it. We're cutting the cast off now. And she was able to resume her athletic practice. I mean, she did it carefully for the first couple of days just to test it out, but she was able to go back to full activity almost immediately.
That's amazing. I mean, my question... What?
no atrophy.
I know, right? So the thing is, when are we starting to use this in our medical system? It's like we kind of start to understand. I know it's a money problem. There's not much money made from all of this. And it's that the healing power that's in us when we really start to work with that mind and the breath. I love that you brought up the breath. So important, right? Suddenly things can change and we can activate stuff that we had no idea was there. Yeah.
Well, the other piece that we have not talked about, which I want to get back to. Oh, and I had made a little scribble here about your sleep. I just wanted to share with you something I've heard from a couple of different people who are very involved in sleep and rest, that the worst procrastination possible is sleep in terms of what it does to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told that to friends who've decided, oh, okay, instead of procrastinating, the first time I feel tired, no, I'm not going to finish the chapter. I'm just going to go ahead and turn off the light. And they notice that they start getting better sleep. But the word I want to come back to is how we first met, which is through a Qigong training.
Right.
And although, yes, we both had the same teacher there, I want to refer to another teacher and a delightful book, very simple, straightforward, called The Healer Within. And it talks about a Buzhong Qigong, which is life enhancement Qigong. And so before there was a Qigong, there were earlier forms, and they were mostly called life enhancement forms. Qi means life force. Gong means work. So committed practice to increase life force. And in this case, the Buzhong Qigong, but the healer within. So if you begin to encourage and support and establish a relationship with your heart, with your healer within, and the presencing is definitely part of it. Maybe that's all directed by an attitude of, I'm going to be more hygienically appropriate with my body. But something that runs through all of the different types of Qigong is the idea of effortless ease. If you're trying, you're going to have a trying life. You know, if you're pushing, if you're stressing, that is not necessarily in your interest. So maybe better to back off. So let me tell a crazy back off story, which is we were working with the track team at the university and timing them going around the track. And then we said, and you know, go for it. We want to get your best possible time. So they're pushing it. And then they came back and we went, all right, let's try this. I'd like you to find a place where you're not stressing, you're not pushing, where maybe it's around 95, 96. You'll have to find it for yourself. Because you'll know when you start to feel you're stressing, and you'll know when you've backed off. You want to find right on that edge of stress, kind of the boundary between pleasure and pain, which also is also where healing happens. They were invariably faster.
Wow! By stressing less, by forcing less.
By just backing off to where it was effortless. Well, I don't mean effortless in the sense of they were totally collapsed, but that they were not putting out that extra stress, that extra push, that extra, so effortless ease.
You know, when I teach Qigong, this is exactly what I feel like is the most important thing first to learn is how to relax. Like when we talk about the five, you know, the five regulations, the most important thing is how soft can we be, how relaxed so everything can flow, right? We're constantly taking that life flow and disconnect from it, and then we think we get good results. So that learning, again, to coming back to our source, relaxing, remembering where we actually are from, what's really going on, reconnecting is for me so important. I just know for myself how much healing and how much things are possible when I do that.
Well, and we haven't talked much about relationships, but this is a place where relationships can be really important. And I'm going to give you an extreme example, which was when I was working with the rowing team at the university. There's a lot of stories there, but the one I'm wanting to get at, there was one young man who could never get what's called layback. So as they have straightened their legs in the rowing shell, they've straightened their legs, and now they're starting to lean their body back, and then finally they will pull their arms in. He could never get the layback right. And I would be alongside in the coach's lounge, and I kept looking. I noticed that he was constantly gritting his teeth. And so I had a megaphone, whoopee! And so I would talk through the megaphone to him, you know, Richard, relax your jaw. Richard, relax your jaw. And after a while, when he was able to relax his jaw, then his layback came into position.
Wow. So
we can have people in our lives who maybe we don't want to give them a megaphone, but people in our lives, maybe teachers, maybe, so you're my chi sister, maybe by doing practice together, whether it's on Zoom, taking classes on Zoom, maybe, you know, going to a practice down at the community center, whatever it is, where there are opportunities together to see how bodies work and experience how my own body works, and have feedback from people who probably know a little better than I do. It doesn't have to be a master, just needs to be somebody who's committed and paying attention to their own bodies.
So important, that community. We are community people. Basically, to that question of like, why are we not using, right, breath and relaxation and visualization and all of that stuff that we know works, scientifically works, not more in the healthcare system, is because it does not make money. And that the, especially here in the US, but I think in a lot of other countries as well, that a healthcare system is not set up for healing, really. So it is set up to make money. I love what you said about it's a system of trauma, right? Where people who are traumatized themselves through their education, like doctors, nurses, having to work with traumatized people. And this is that endless loop that can't get out of that. Again, that relax your jaw, breathe, let's tune in what's real, really true. So we're actually almost getting to the end of the show very fast here. It's coming up. Russell, perhaps just let people very clearly know, if you like, how do you work? You take clients, you work with individuals, you work with groups. Like, let us know in a couple sentences, perhaps.
All of the above. If you look at our website, dynamicvitality.com, just look around and shop around and see what you notice there. And, you know, call if you need to have a quick chat about, you know, the possibility of doing some work together. It would not be doing the work. And then if you decide, you can buy a session with me. There are also classes. I teach classes. My wife, who's also very body-oriented, her work was in kind of transformational healing, but is focused on walking and posture primarily in her work, and you'll find her classes on that as well.
Yeah, that is fascinating stuff. I remember when Suki shared some dynamic walking on the hill as well with us. And then the dynamic swimming. I mean, you're a swim coach too, right?
Yeah, I've done a lot of swimming and for a long time and been very successful. And my interest is not in competitive swimming, or hasn't been for a long time now, but rather in people being able to swim for the rest of their lives comfortably without getting any kind of stress injuries or whatever. I'm not currently teaching in a pool. I do have a couple of clients who heard, and we've had sessions on the phone on dry land, standing up, learn to swim. And you've actually, Florina, you've actually experienced an introduction to that.
That's right. Very fascinating, too. Like, yeah, how can we use our body again with more ease, right? And more efficiency and get to our potential that we can actually thrive as humans? Yeah. It's so fascinating how much we can evolve and experiment and have joy with it all. Yeah. What a pleasure to talk with you, Russell. So dynamicvitality.com, right? Yeah, I would encourage everybody to check that out. And a huge thank you. It was such an honor, Russell, to speak with you and to share and to learn so much. Till soon.
This has been a KMUD podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast and also on our website, kmud.org.